What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
As we have been doing almost since the start of this iteration of the genocide by the Zionist state of Israel against the Palestinian people, we will spend a full hour today covering regional news. To date, the latest undercount of dead Palestinians is 46,726, according to the Ministry of Health. However, a recent report has come out that since the death tolls being reported could be as much as 40% off in the numbers. 40% more dead Palestinians than the almost 47,000 currently being reported. And large swaths of those killed are children. But what about the children that live and are living through the horror of the genocide? What is the impact on them? Our guest today, our first guest, is Kim McCall, the Executive Director for Children in Conflict, whose UK-based partner organization, War Child, recently published a report on the psychological impact of Israel's genocide on the children in Gaza. The report is called Need Study, Impact of War in Gaza on Children with Vulnerabilities and Families. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Kat. Thanks so much for turning a critical eye on what is happening here. As you mentioned, children don't start wars, but they really suffer the most. And every child, as I'm sure you agree, deserves a childhood free from the horrors of war and the chance to really just be a kid. And Children in Conflict and War Child, and through our alliance of partners, we're committed to protecting and empowering children, ensuring that they have the opportunities to rebuild their lives with dignity and hope.
Yeah, I think that one of the most painful and also mobilizing pieces of this iteration of the genocide were the images of children. Either being, you know, I can't even speak it out loud. Suffering the horrors of this war, either directly on their bodies or watching it happen to the bodies of the family members, which has shifted things a little bit in terms of the conversation around Palestine, because we've been able to see what is happening and not just hear. I want to start with just some like brass tacks, and then we'll get into impact. I want to start with, you know, how many children were interviewed for the report and what were the material conditions of the families or the units that are caring for them a part of?
Sure. So we provided technical assistance for this report, which was conducted by our friends at the Community Training Center for Crisis Management based in Gaza. And the methodology used for it, we collected data from 504 families, which represented over 2,300 individuals. And we used surveys with caregivers, a lot of focus group discussions, and key informant interviews. And the focus was on children that have been injured or separated from family members or disabled during the war and the toll on their lives. Kids with specific vulnerabilities, and just highlighting the psychological and behavioral impacts of the war. And I also just want to mention that the findings reflect a representative cross-section of Gaza's affected regions. So we pulled insights from both the north and the south.
And the four findings objectives.
I
was just going to move into the objectives really quickly. The objectives were to identify the most significant problems facing separated, injured, and disabled children in Gaza, to determine these children's protection and psychological needs, identify the most common psychological symptoms among separated, injured, and disabled children resulting from this genocide. You used the word war in the report. I used the word genocide on the show. And assess the level of psychological stress experienced by caregivers. And broadly, what'd y'all find?
Yeah. So, well, as you mentioned, over 1.1 million children in Gaza are urgently in need of aid, and they're just enduring the unprecedented trauma from this relentless conflict. The report found that 96% of children feel that death is imminent, and 49% have further expressed a wish to die. And this is according to caregivers. So, it just really shows that children are bearing the brunt of this war. They're facing displacement and violence and loss and deprivation. And they're really exhibiting some severe mental health system symptoms, with 73% of kids using aggression in their daily lives, 87% living in extreme fear. They are withdrawing, they're having difficulty concentrating. It's just this constant exposure to violence, and the loss of loved ones, as you mentioned, is creating a real mental health emergency. And caregivers are just so worried about the high levels of pessimism and despair among children, you know, with so many of them facing they won't survive. And when we look at the living conditions of families in Gaza, so many, 88% of families have been displaced multiple times. Poverty is super pervasive. Over half of families surveyed are living on less than $125 a month, and 80% unemployment among caregivers and breadwinners. And as we have seen, the infrastructure is just completely frayed and demolished. Homes, schools, healthcare facilities have all been decimated. So there's just this feeling that nowhere is safe. And coming out of that, what we identified as some of the immediate needs that the report goes into are immediate needs for community-based mental health and psychosocial support to help kids address the trauma, and also support for their caregivers, of course. We also know that, like, we need access to deliver this humanitarian aid, and that is incredibly critical. And we've heard that throughout the course of this war. So it's not just, of course, the mental health and psychosocial support. How can you serve kids and, you know, continue with makeshift education even when they're hungry or cold or injured? And so we need medical supplies, we need food and water, we need hygiene kits and winter clothing, and so many assistive devices like crutches and wheelchairs. You know, I think that cash assistance, the report found, could really help to mitigate some of the poverty and to support those that are trying to find suitable, if any, living conditions. And we're also calling for temporary learning spaces and materials to help children kind of regain that stability and continue their education amidst the chaos.
One of the things that hit me, and as you know, mentioned early on in the report, is that, you know, when studies about children or certain dynamics in our society play out, it's usually a, you know, a percentage of the population, you know, 15%, 25%. This study represents virtually all of the children. All of the children in Gaza. One of the findings was that there are children running households. My assumption there is that this means the parents have been murdered and the eldest has then taken on responsibility for their siblings. That is a compounded trauma, yes, when the child has become the adult, and especially among these conditions, and then becomes responsible and probably feeling hopeless and helpless in preserving the life of their younger siblings.
Absolutely. And you're exactly right. Usually when we're working in a conflict area, and poor child and children in conflict work in 15 different regions around the world, we find that, you know, a percentage, like you said, 25, 30% of children coming out of a war will need additional psychosocial and mental health support. But we're seeing in Gaza that 100% of children need help. And that, I think, is just such a critical finding and just a real call to action for the international community. And to your point, we did identify so many families being run by, you know, youth that are 17 or 18 years old and now are responsible for caring for young children, and just that that additive layer. And War Child has a lot of different programs that help to not only support kids. We have something called Team Up, which is a psychosocial support. It uses play in order to help kids process their trauma and, you know, provides them with kind of relief from the chaos and anxiety that they're feeling and carrying. And we also have programs to support caregivers and these young adults that now are being pushed into that role, that provide mental health supports for them and other access and kind of wraparound services. So critical, though.
For those of you just tuning in, we are talking to Kim McCall, the Executive Director for Children in Conflict, whose UK-based partner organization called War Child recently published a report on the psychological impact of Israel's genocide on the children in Gaza. Kim, you mentioned this, you know, earlier on in our conversation, that many of the families have been displaced repeatedly. And I think it's important to talk about, right, it's not like moving from apartment to apartment. It's like being, you know, your house being bombed, the military telling you have to leave, and then bouncing from refugee to refugee camp as Israel, you know, reignites intensives in the area that they've already cleared. Under normal conditions, it's hard for children who bounce around a lot. What does it mean in these circumstances?
Yeah, I think we saw it in kind of the psychological toll that children are experiencing, and, you know, the extreme fear, the withdrawal, the difficulty in concentrating, the kind of fear of imminent death. All of these are kind of compounded by that lack of stability and moving so frequently. And as we spoke earlier, 88% of children or families have been displaced multiple times. Over 21% have been displaced six or more times, and now living in camps and makeshift shelters that don't have electricity or running water. And just so hard to not have any sort of stability or structure to your day. And so some of the programming that we've been able to provide during this time is kind of a modified delivery of our team up program. So, you know, same time, same place every day, we're able to provide caring and trusted adults that interact with kids, play games with them, help them, you know, let loose and just be children for even a short while. And that helps them to process the trauma and to really, you know, play and live and learn. And so that is something that we've been working on and able to provide during this time.
That's actually a really good segue to the next piece that I wanted to talk about, which is the question, what does severe trauma in childhood mean for these young people when they grow into adults? If, and I don't mean to be morbid, if they grow into adults. And given the fact that these adults will be the ones continuing to rebuild, right? The estimation for rebuilding after this is decades and decades and decades from now. Sure. What does that mean for the longer term outlook, not just for them, their mental health, but then the collective mental health of Palestine?
Yeah, well, it's, as you mentioned, it's a very long road of recovery ahead. And what we know is that the real work can't truly begin until the bombs stop falling. And we've, of course, been able to run some of our unique interventions, but there's just so much more work to be done. In addition to psychosocial support, we've got to make sure that kids are getting back in school and that they're receiving education in whatever form or format is, you know, able to be provided. But we know if we're not able to provide kids with these supports, that it is a long and difficult adulthood ahead.
And then, Kim McCall, would it be right or accurate to talk about the intersection of mental health issues with the physical health issues of things like starvation, communicable diseases, children who have lost limbs or suffered other types of disabilities as a result of this genocide?
Yeah, I mean, what we know is that all of that is compounded. And what we're seeing is it's so hard to help a child process the trauma and to deliver, you know, mental health services or to even deliver some makeshift educational program if they're hungry or if they're in pain or if they're cold in the winter temperatures. And so it requires such a multifaceted response. And we, along with all of our partners, know just how critical it is that we are able to get aid into this area and into this region. And so access is just so, it just remains so critical. And we know, you know, I think the UN and partners are estimating that it's going to be over $6.5 billion to really address the humanitarian needs of all 3.3 million people in Gaza and then in West Bank as well.
There is a focus, Kim, on breadwinners of the family, and the data sort of framed it under that umbrella. What has happened to the breadwinner dynamic inside of Gazan families, and how do those shifts, including children needing to work, and I'm putting work in air quotes, because I want you to talk about the types of, you know, the impact on jobs and mm-hmm. what folks are doing to scrape by. How do those shifts, what is happening, and then how do those shifts exacerbate the mental health issues facing children in Gaza?
Yeah, well, over half of the families we surveyed said that they're living on less than, you know, like the equivalent of about $125 a month. And there's just, as we all know, life-saving aid and everyday items continue to be impeded from reaching Gaza. And this has really led to unprecedented price rises for food and essential goods. And at the same time, we know that about 80% of caregivers and breadwinners are unemployed. And according to the UN, 80% of Gaza's businesses have been damaged or destroyed since the start of this current war as well. You know, not being able to provide for your family is incredibly stressful. And again, as families are being forced into poverty, as they're being, continually displaced, we just know that it's exacerbating the mental health of both adults and children.
Post-traumatic stress disorder running rampant has to be. We know now much more than we knew, say, after Vietnam, and that there are levels to it. It manifests in different ways. And my guess would be, I'm not a therapist, but we're talking about severe PTSD for these mm-hmm. children. Talk about the behavior that's being exhibited by young people in Gaza that are living through this terror.
Yeah, what we've seen is that children are exhibiting aggression, extreme fear, but there's also just a lot of withdrawal and difficulty concentrating. And what we propose at War Child through our evidence-based methodologies is really a continuum of care. So we've got, some of our lighter touch mental health and psychosocial support programs, like the one I mentioned, where kids are engaged in games with caring and kind adults that are focused on them. And then we've got referral services for additional mental health supports. We also have similar type programming for caregivers, because they're also experiencing this trauma and the exacerbated effect of needing to be responsible and taking care of children. And of course, the kind of stress that imparts on them as well. And then we also do a lot of protective work. So not seeing it yet in Gaza so much, but we, in other regions, work to make sure that, child labor is not happening, that kids are not being forced into marriage for money, that children that are separated from families and unaccompanied in these war zones are being able to, live with caring adults that will take responsibility. So reconnecting families as well. And so protection is a big piece of our work. And then the third pillar that we really focus on is education, because we know that is the key to kind of breaking the generational cycle and providing kids with more opportunities for the future. So we have some programs, namely one called Can't Wait to Learn, which is tablet-based. It's so cool. It's gamified math and reading that helps kids keep up and catch up in those areas, no matter where they seek refuge. And so we've not been able to deliver that intervention yet in Gaza, but we know it'll be really helpful once we're at a stage where kids are able to get back to school and get back to learning.
I mean, what school structures are left? That will be a piece of that conversation as well, since Israel has intentionally targeted schools repeatedly. Protection was actually where I was going to go next in our last couple of minutes speaking with each other, and that is this issue of gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how these conditions have increased gender-based violence and what you see the pathway to interrupting that being?
Sure. I can't speak too deeply about this, but we do know that so many children are unaccompanied or separated. And so one of our key activities is, providing or connecting them with essential services and, where possible, supporting their temporary caregivers. In situations like war and acute conflict, we know that there are more risks and that kids that are unaccompanied or separated are going to be exposed to those at an even higher level. And so far we've worked with over 600 children and supported them with different activities in this sense.
Kim McCall, how do security concerns factor into this, i.e., you know, protecting participants that have chosen to give you information and protecting the people that are gathering information?
Yeah, we take that all very seriously and, you know, work in tandem with local partners to make sure that our staff are safe and that, you know, free from risk of retaliation or anything of that nature. And, you know, we are working through many local partners in Gaza. We work with lots of Gazans since it is difficult to actually get new team members into the Gaza region right now. So just making sure that people are trained and safe and taking care of themselves, and that we're also supporting the mental health and needs of our team members have always been our priorities.
Mm-hmm. We love to hear that part, right? Like what support for the folks that are doing the support to increase sustainability. Kim McCall, is there anything that I have not asked you that you want the listeners to know? And as you wrap up that answer, please give them the website where they can learn more, find the report, support the work you all are doing.
Yeah, and I really appreciate, again, you having me on the show, Kat, and your attention to the, you know, critical status of what's happening in Gaza and beyond. But I would just say that the current situation, it needs a massive response, and that can't just be delivered off the back of a truck. And we are busy already scaling up our biggest ever emergency response in war child history. And we are anticipating that it'll cost over $25 million to reach about 1 million children across Gaza and the West Bank over the next few years, with things like basic needs, protection, education, and mental health support. And that'll include the rehabilitation of lasting mental health services so that children can recover from their trauma and build resilience and well-being now and for the generations to come. And I encourage any of your listeners that would like to learn more to check us out at www.childreninconflict.org. And we would love to connect and get more people involved. We need international support, and I think that is what was so critical coming out of this. Let's come together to protect children, prioritize their rights, and really give them the future they deserve.
Kim McCall, thank you so much for your work, for joining us on this show. You are always welcome back.
Oh, thanks again, Kat.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.